You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
If you work as a manufacturing facilities engineer, installing a new piece of equipment can be as complex as the machinery itself. From prep work to alignment and testing, it's your team's job to put it all together. That's why it's good to have Grainger on your side. With industrial-grade products and next-day delivery, Grainger helps ensure you have everything you need close at hand through every step of the installation. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome into another episode of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, brought to you by Rotoballer. This is episode 347. Thank you for joining us. I'm your host, Eric Cross. We have a great guest with us today for a really fun episode. But first, let's bring in my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, how's it going, bud?
It is going good. Just excited to be back on. And we're recording on a new platform, which is interesting. So trying to figure all that out. Getting ready to fly out to Arizona to see our co-host, or our guest today, actually. So by the time you're listening to this, we will be in Arizona, which is exciting.
Yeah, or at least in the air flying out there.
Yeah.
We'll both be in the air tomorrow morning, get out there, you know, midday or so, get some nice warm weather, though not too hot. It's been like 100 plus out there, as our guest definitely knows. Now it's going to be like in the 70s and 80s this upcoming week, which is going to be very, very nice. But let's bring on our guest. He has a home field advantage coming up this week. He's a host and analyst for Fantasy Pros and Betting Pros, co-owner of the In This League Network, and of course, the creator of the Prospect One podcast, Mr. Chris Welsh. Chris, how's it going, bud?
What's up, guys? You guys just waited 24 hours, and we could have done this in person.
That's
but
true.
Schedules are always tough, but I'm glad you guys are coming out. I'm very mad that you guys are coming out to amazing weather. It has been so hot, so unbearably hot, and it's going to be mid-70s, but it's good to talk to you guys, and I know I'm going to see you in a couple days and get you on my show live, hopefully live from a stadium again, and a ball can come flying at us or something.
Yeah, I can always take out Clegg. Yeah, it's I've been tracking the weather. You know, it was like, obviously, you know, 90s, 100s, and it was like getting closer and closer to the week we were getting out there, and I'm like, man, I hope it's not like 90s, 100s when we're out there, because I'm a Maine kid, as everyone knows. I don't do hundreds, you know.
It's the day, I'm not even joking, the day you guys land. You guys come in, I think, late Monday night. It's like 87 that day. It goes down to 71 the next day, and it just hangs. I know people don't care about the weather podcast here, but it's a part of the Arizona landscape. And I will tell you, actually, in talking to players, some of these guys haven't really experienced that type of stuff. They haven't really sat here and experienced playing day in and day out. I mean, it was like 108 the first day in the AFL. The first week, it was 105 plus every single day. It's new to some of these guys. And, you know, the being able to pull this off for 2 weeks straight in really, really intense weather, like sometimes it wears these guys out. And, you know, a random AFL thing, unfortunately, Bryce Eldridge just got taken off the AFL roster. And they called it to avoid burnout. And it's like, it's a long season. All the guys will tell you. Henry Bolte told me that. He was just like, it has been a long season. And he's gone as of today, or supposedly supposed to be gone after today. And a lot of these guys have not only had this really long season for the burnout, but also you take the weather and, you know, just the physical acumen it takes in this, like, it wears these guys down. So, you know, you get these guys out of 100 degree weather after they've been playing all season. It's not like that big of a surprise. But again, luckily you guys won't have to deal with that, and it'll be clear skies and beautiful weather for lots of podcasting and the first pitch conference.
Yeah, thankfully, I don't do 90s or 100s, so that was not going to be great for me. So I'm very glad.
You guys are live podcasting from First Pitch too, right?
We are. Yep.
Yes, sir.
Be on, was it Friday night? No, Thursday night. Friday night.
Yeah, you guys pick Halloween night. I was going to try to join you, but it was unfortunately it's Halloween night. So I got kiddos out there. But you guys are going to kind of open up the First Pitch conference with a pod.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're one of the first ones. What are you going as for Halloween, Welsh?
Oh, I'm going as a wannabe scout. It's a really good costume I have, and it's, you know, I wear the plaided shorts or like the khaki shorts. You wear a polo. So if you at home want to make this outfit, you have to wear really trendy sunglasses. You can't do the baseball player sunglasses like the 100s or primes. You have to wear like kind of circular black reflective glasses. You wear a backpack with you, and then you have a radar gun, and that's the I Want to Be a Scout kit.
He's just walking around with a radar gun, like, see how fast people are walking.
And you just turn over to people, and you just go, barrel, exit velocity, and you're a scout.
Start yelling baseball terms.
Yeah, you just yell it in their face. It's a great costume. It's a great costume. I'm doing that. I do it kind of all year round, too.
Oh, that's great. I want to see that. That would be awesome. Your kids are just like, Dad, stop it.
And I'm like, exit velocity.
That would be phenomenal. But all right, so we go from a little AFL talk to start off, but now we're going over to our main course here today. It's some FYPD, nice little mock draft here. We did one back with James Anderson in July, so we might reference that a little bit as well to see how players have shifted over the last, you know, 3+ months. I'm sure there will be some much different picks than there were back in July right after the draft concluded. We'll get as many picks in as we can in, you know, the hour and 10 or so. I'm assuming it'll be 20 to 25 range. It's kind of the sweet spot here. We got 24 done in the previous one. And we'll start out with Welsh and then go over to Clegg, then me, and we'll snake it. So Mr. Chris Welsh, why don't you lead us off?
Well, I am not going to differ. I am happy to say that in the one we did in July, I was on my own little tiny mountain at the time of Travis Bazana. I think a lot of people have kind of come over to that now, and I am going to start the first-year player off with Travis Bazana again. A great combination of barreling skills with hard-hit balls. If you look at Cleveland's ballpark as well, something I talked about on that show back then, you know, it's kind of opened up with that panel they've opened up, and you've seen, like, you know, the right side of the field, so left-handed pull hitters being able to get, like, fly balls out. Stephen Kwan was starting to get that, something that helps Bazana. Didn't have, like, the greatest debut, you know. I mean, he hit under 240, but like I said before, I think he is the best combination of everything. I think the bat-to-ball skills, there's some big, big power hitters that are we're going to be talking about in a minute that I think have a lot more of contact questions, and I don't think Bazana has as much of that. But again, the combination of barreled hard-hit balls with the ability to steal bases, hit near the top of the lineup, not strike out, and walk. I mean, I really, really do love this guy from top to bottom, and I'm... whatever this is, 4 months later, sticking with my same number one.
Yeah, and this position too, second base, just overall, I was kind of digging into my second base rankings for 2025 and Dynasty, etc. It's kind of weak right now. Yeah, we get some guys coming up, you know, like Christian Campbell, Matt Shaw might play second base, etc. But it's kind of a down position, so you could really see Bazana turning into a top flight, you know, top, you know, two or three tier second baseman pretty soon. I mean, maybe he's up later this year, but yeah, I definitely like that pick with Bazana there. Clegg, who you got it to?
Yeah, I'm gonna go with JJ Weatherholt. You know, it is really interesting because I think that a lot of this class really struggled in debut. I won't say struggled, but no one really stood out. If anybody wanted to take the top spot, no one really did that. And Weatherholt came in and was pretty good. I think he did everything you wanted to see. You know, he was down in single A in the Florida State League. But yeah, I think the biggest question with Weatherholt at the end of the day is the consistent lower body, soft tissue type injuries that we've seen. But when on the field, the performance has been really, really good. I mean, sophomore year, he hit 16 homers, stole 36 bases with a 449, 517, 787 slash. This year, he missed time, but still 331, 472, 589. Hit 8 home runs with a lot of missed time. It's heavy contact. It's very low chase. honestly, a profile that's not all that different than Bazzano when you, you know, stack them up. When we look at the under the hood metrics, a lot of similarities there. Biggest question, and the reason that Bazzano, I think, is ahead is just the injuries with Weatherholt. So, yeah, I think that at this point, I would say, like, this is probably the more consensus top two, but I guess if you have somebody else in the top two, then that's fine, but you go a lot of ways in this class.
This might be a draft where I would look to trade down. You know, like, we've had in years past, obviously, that's the studs that you're like, all right, I want to, you know, trade up to get that guy, or if you're up there already, you're not even entertaining offers, or you have to be blown away to trade out of that top two or three, whatever it might be. But this year, I'm like, I might rather trade down. If I had pick two or three, I could get, like, pick eight plus pick, you know, 15, 16, something like that. I think I would look to do that. What are you guys' thoughts on that?
Sorry, I mean, I don't disagree with that. I'm going to throw that out there. I definitely don't disagree with that sentiment, because I think there's a value of players that might be overrated and a few that might be underrated between that, like, 2 and 7 to 8 range. I don't think it's harmful to trade out. I wanted to ask, though, do you guys think it's weird the industry turn on a Charlie Condon when, like, in July when we did this, the conversation was like, hey, guys, it's Charlie Condon and everybody else. He's in Colorado. Yeah. It's the greatest thing we've ever seen. And, like, in a four-month span of like, rookie ball and bridge league and instructs, that Clegg just said the consensus is Weatherholt and Bazzano. I'm always just fascinated with that big of a turn, especially with a player that I'm not sure Condon did anything massively negative to kind of fall off of this. He's still in the the destination was what everybody was selling. I mean, right. Everybody, but, you know, for the most part, for Condon to fall off this early and not even be in that consensus, I don't know. I think it's kind of, like, odd. And I know we're going to talk about him here in a second with the maybe not. I don't know whether it's crazy, but, like, Clegg, I just start with you. I'm just curious. Like, do you think that when you said that's kind of odd that guy who was going to be the 40 plus home run guy is not in your top two or in the conversation, I guess?
You know, I think that it's interesting from the standpoint of, you know, Condon entered for me as the top guy over Bazzano. I mean, he had one of the greatest collegiate seasons that we've seen from a statistical performance standpoint. Everything under the hood, you know, kind of backed it. I mean, we were talking about, like, you know, Condon versus, like, a Dylan Cruz or Wyatt Langford last year, and Condon put up numbers that were just insanely better pretty much across the board. And, you know, while he has moved a couple spots down, for me, I think that it's been a lot more extreme for others from the standpoint of, I mean, we're talking a small sample of performance. And to see people rank him one and then drop him out of the top 10, it's like, that's the extreme move that I'm not willing to do on a small sample. Sure, looked bad, the underlying, you know, some struggles against breaking ball. It's like, there's some things that didn't look great in pro ball. But again, I think if you believed in Charlie Condon during draft time and you were willing to rank him at the top, to drop him out of the top 10 of FYPD seems pretty harsh, in my opinion.
It 100% is. And that's why I'm going to take him here at 3. I'm not letting it was 25 games. And yeah, he looked terrible. There's no way to sugarcoat the numbers. They are bad. He struck out too much. He only walked 4 times in 109 plate appearances. Slash line is terrible. Had 1 home run and 6 extra base hits total in 25 games. You can't sugarcoat that. But I'm also not going to let 25 games make me forget, like Chris mentioned, how good he was last year. And really the last 2 years. He was phenomenal in 2023, even better in 2024. This is a guy that had one of the better seasons we've seen in the last decade in collegiate baseball. And again, he was, like Welsh mentioned, the number one dude when we did this. So it was like, all right, and I was there. And now I think, yeah, I'd put Bazzano ahead. You know, I can still even see putting him too. And I see if you want to drop him down below Bazzano, fine. Weatherholt, I'd be fine with. Even like Kurtz. But once you get past like that 4, 5, 6 range, I can't see dropping him any lower. It's because it was only such a small sample size. I mean, he's still got Colorado, you know, in his future there. Still has a lot of great attributes, you know, the power, you know, the bat-to-ball skills, the approach, which was phenomenal in college. He had a pretty drastic, you know, cross country, you know, Georgia up to Washington, much different climate up there too. Just a lot of differences to try to get settled in to pro ball. So yeah, while has he moved down my rankings a little bit? Yeah. But at the same time, I'm not going to forget how good he was, how highly he was thought of just a few short months ago. And I'm not going to let that drive his ranking way down in my own ranking. So if I have a pick in the 3-4 range, I will be happy to take him, as I'm assuming he will fall to me. I'm assuming it's going to be Bazan and Weatherholt. You know, maybe another guy sneaks up in there every now and then, maybe a Kurtz, maybe I'm going to Chase Burns or something like that. People want a pitcher, but I'll be very happy to take Charlie Condon
so
there.
So my question is, who outright worked their way past Condon?
Right.
You know, yep. Like the entire class really struggled. I think you can say like a Cam Smith came in and dominated. I mean, again, he was playing in single A when he was doing all his damage, like in low A. I mean, the competition was not good. I think that, you know, you look at a Christian Moore as well, but Christian Moore also had some struggles as he moved up. So the contact rates dipped pretty hard as Moore moved up, obviously got injured. But like, I don't think we can look at the board and say like, no, everybody like was far superior to Condon, outperformed him. I think that a lot of the debut players had struggles. And so it's hard to say like, you know, while Condon was bad, sure, there were a lot of other debuts that weren't great either. And to drop him below some names that I've seen him drop below is just kind of interesting to me.
And I guess my point ultimately kind of comes, it's full circle to what you just said, that I'm not really sure that it's worth making every single judgment on their debut. And I think that might be a mistake that's going on. Like, it's good to see the data. Like, I'll be honest with you. There's a guy we're going to talk about that I was much higher on that after seeing a lot of him, I've changed some of my tune. But I guess to be more focused on performance on their debut after playing a full season, whether it's high school or collegiately, and then coming to the majors and then maybe moving levels, to pick apart that, I'm not sure that it's, I'm willing to come off of some of the talent side. Now, it's a different story when you get reports of like, you know, oh, the guy's decision making is really bad. They don't know how to pick up rate. Like, that's different. Like, yeah. The inner lining things are different than the actual physical statistics. So, like, I see stats and you say, like, who performed better to jump or who performed to drop? And it's like, I don't really care about what the stats are, especially for first-year player guys. I think that should be at the bottom rung of the decision-making, but there aren't necessarily, like, wild, awesome reports on every single person out there. And that's what's kind of a bummer about Major League Baseball changing rookie ball a month earlier, because now all the rookies were put into the Bridge League, and what would have been a much bigger sample size for college players, some were zero, some were very little, and high school almost none, you know, or very, very tiny. The guys like Braylon Payne and stuff like that. So I don't know. I you know, we have to spend the next 5, 6, 7, 8 months, you know, returning and figuring out the best possible way to put these first year player and taking whatever data we can. But like, statistic hunting with guys that were just drafted is like, that's the thing that I don't really fly on. And I was curious at how that floated around with Condon. So sorry, we kind of stopped there, but I think it's a good thing because yeah. Condon was the talk of first year player. If you're going to have this conversation, then the number one conversation you guys should be having is why did Condon not go in the top two here? That's a big story to some of the other guys that are going to jump like one or two spots.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so let's looking back at the previous mock we did, where Welsh still took Bazan 1. I took Condon 2 in that one. Then I went Weatherholt, Burns, Connor Griffin, Jack Caglione. It's like none of these guys, the guys that did have great years, they were like ranked a good 10, 15 spots below Condon. The guys behind me, again, Bazana, Weatherholt, Kurt, okay, those guys I can see, but you know, Montgomery didn't play, and he was so coming back from injury. Jack wasn't that great. Griffin didn't play. You know, Burns didn't pitch. It was, you know, Theo Gilton. Like, none of these guys jumped ahead. So, yeah, I just can't see. It wasn't like, you know, 3 through 10 had phenomenal, you know, last 2 months of the year. That really wasn't the case. So, yeah, I will be happy to get Condon in that, you know, 3 to 5 range for sure. My next pick here, going to pick 4, swinging back the other way. I'll take Nick Kurtz. He's moved up a lot for me. And he was definitely in that second tier, which was a big glob. He's moved up to the top of it now. I still have Condon 3 and then Kurtz 4 in my own personal rankings. And, you know, he only had 12 games, but he did his thing. He hit for power. He walked more than he struck out. Kind of everything we thought he would. Like, he came as advertised. And, again, it's 12 games. I'm not I wasn't kind of bumping him up because of that, but I think I ranked him too low last time. Like, he might have the highest floor in this draft, or at least top two or three floor without questions, given the approach he brings to the plate, bat the ball, the power that he has, and he's probably going to be up with Oakland, you know, maybe even later on in 2025, and that lineup is now actually kind of fun with the, you know, emergence of Brent Rooker, Lawrence Butler, et cetera, and on, you know, better home ballpark over the next few years in Sacramento as opposed to Oakland. That's a nice little bonus there for Kurtz. And yeah, I think he's a step in and be a nice middle of the order guy to complement the, you know, the Butler and Rooker tandem. And I think he's going to be, you know, even more studly in OBP format. So if you have OBP, you know, if that's the league you play in, I could see taking him third easily, maybe even number two. I think he's got a case go as high as two in OBP formats, given the prowess he has there. So, yeah, I will take Nick Kurtz here at number four, and he went number nine to Welsh last time we did this. So a little bump there. But
I'm bummed. Yeah, I was hoping he was going to. It was funny. He there's this rumor going around for a while. Like, I knew before the AFL that Kurtz was coming. But the thought was he was going to come this week because Henry Bolte's supposed to be leaving. And I'm in surprise. And it was like a wrestling entrance because all of a sudden it was like, oh, my God, is that Nick Kurtz? Like, Nick Kurtz, like, comes out the tunnel in surprise. You guys know the tunnel. It was like, my God.
That's Nick Kurtz's music.
Yeah, exactly. But also, like, he wasn't added to the roster. So he wasn't anywhere. No one knew. And he was just there in his uniform. And I did get to talk. And he said he was pretty excited to be in the AFL. And it's going to be very exciting seeing him. That is a benefit. You guys lost, like, you know, Eldridge and a few players, but getting to see Kurtz and kind of solidifying that first-year player is going to be huge because I think, you know, coming back to the exact opposite of what I said earlier, you want to talk about performances, he dominated in his performance. Like, how much should you take of that? I'm not sure, but, you know, like, the collegiate data was just monster hard-hit stuff. Great, like you said, great OBP guy. And then this is also a team in the A's is, like, weird as it feels and everything. I mean, they have just shined in players that really barrel up the ball and have, you know, like, really good barrel percentage with a guy that has huge hard hit stuff. I mean, it's like the Brent Rooker that, like, Brent Rooker's hard to, like, year after year, like in a dynasty, he's like 30 years old and it's like, where do you value him? Like, Kurtz is like the version of that, but with all the, like, future upside and higher OBP and stuff like that. So I love this pick. I was like, hoping he was going to fall to six.
The only thing that would have made it better is if he came out to, like, you know, like Stone Cold's music and the glass shatters and all of a sudden he just comes out of the dugout with a bat in his hand. That would have been awesome.
Just slam two baseballs together, throw them in the audience.
That'd be great.
Well, Kurtz was definitely going to be my pick. I think I'd take him number three right now. Just, I think he's so safe. I think his tools are as good as any. I mean, the only thing, again, is he's a little bit of injury concern, but I will, at five, take Christian Moore. This is kind of where it gets interesting, I think. Moore was really good in his debut. There was talk that he could be up in the majors, just knowing the Angels. He did get hurt, so obviously something to watch, but I mean, he had one of the best debuts of any drafty, 6 home runs, 6 doubles in 25 games. He was stellar at Tennessee at 34 homers this year, 1248 OPS, which is crazy. I mean, pretty much the hardest or highest exit velocities of anyone in the class from a college standpoint. 96 mile an hour average was near the top, 112 mile an hour 90th is insane. His contact rates made a major jump, which still in the back of my mind gives me some pause because he had in 2023 a 65% contact rate and a 75% end zone, jumped 77% overall and 83% end zone this season. So that kind of massive jump, like, I hope it's sustainable, but he's a low chase guy. He's been kind of his whole career going to walk. I think if the contact rates continue to stick as he moves up the minors and probably in the majors pretty soon, if we're being honest, it is the Angels. And I think just the power OBP combo is pretty significant here. So Christian Moore is my pick.
I like it. Yeah, it definitely opens up. Once you get, I think for me at least, I know other people are a bit different, but I think that top four is pretty set for me. And then after that, like you want to go to a couple, one of the high school guys, you have, you know, a couple pitchers in there. You guys like Moore that shot up, who I had like I think 12 or 13. Now he's definitely, you know, a top 8 guy too. So yeah, this is like a big glob for me now. So you can go several different ways. But yeah, Moore obviously was phenomenal. All right, pick. We're going over to Welsh for pick 6 and 7.
Well, Kurtz and Moore were definitely going to be like one that was in it. So this is not a bad spot. If you want to play the performance game, I think like Cam Smith makes a lot of sense. And not even trying to be dismissive of it. Like he had some pretty big college chase numbers, just to point out. Like there's some strikeout there. It was not in, you know, his debut, and he was pushed pretty heavy. 7 homers, .313. But then I think there's like, there are two big talents here. And now one of the players I've changed on is Caglione, but I'm going to take him here. I have more worry, way more worries than I did before. Seeing him out here, I watched him in Instructs. He did not have a super great pro debut. He was in the Bridge League for a tiny bit, some really bad swings. He ended up a little over 100 at-bats, hitting .241, 2 homers, 2 stolen bases. He really does struggle. Because, I mean, I've seen him probably 6 times in the AFL so far, maybe 7. He really does struggle with the, like, low off-speed down and then come back with high fastballs. So, like, that pitch mix change is really affecting him. But here's what I'm going to say. Like, from a performance standpoint, I'm lower on the upside where it was like, holy crap, you know, what if this guy, I think the original thing was like, what if this guy was like Joey Gallo, but with all the good stuff? And it's like, now it's like, what if Joey Gallo, but also like there's no OBP. Like that's like the big downside. But he is a physical freak. He absolutely smashes balls when he gets on them. It's going to be about the development of him being just, you know, like a really good high fastball hitter and being able to recognize off-speed stuff. Because he made some of the worst swings I've seen. I've seen some bad swings from him this year. But in this first year... I mean, Cross, you kind of said it, like, this is where things start to change. Like, the what's concrete, I think what's concrete is, like, Weatherholt, Bazzana at the tippy top. I think Condon, I like Kurtz over Caglione now, so I would have done that as well. But now you're just starting to open up. There's some great pitchers, but I just think playing the upside game, there's a name value game in first-year player fantasy. I'm going to go with Caglione, even though I'm a little bit lower on him. I think you guys are going to be as well, though. He is starting to find some rhythm. Finally had a homer here. You know, he's getting some doubles power, but he doesn't have the pitch recognition. But again, this comes back to what I said of like, hey, this is a big change. You know, there's also a lot of like weird SEC stuff about like, you know, maybe knowing what's coming and stuff. And then you come out here and it's just a brand new game and dudes are just attacking. They know it's just a big swing. So I don't know where you guys were on how far down you went on Caglione, because I think that's been kind of a unanimous thing. Ironically, he's going in the same spot of that RotoWire one here. And I think some people will maybe put him down at 10, and I think that's fine, or outside of it or something like that. But I'm just going to play that name high upside game because I am seeing a positive trajectory happening with him. It's just, yeah, it's not really exactly what you want to see. So I don't know where you guys thought CAG should go.
I have him 7 right now. I mean, I don't know how I feel about that. I mean, I feel like I would move him lower, if anything. I wouldn't go higher on Jack in my own personal rankings, but he's in the middle of this glob for me, and he's what I like to call a Pedro Serrano prospect, where it's like, oh, he can hit the ball an absolute mile, but he's going to strike out a lot too. So how much of that, like, how much average can he hit for? Can he get to 250? I mean, I don't know.
If he gets to 250, he's a star. I'm just going to point that out. Like, if he gets to 250, that's not the question is like, is he going to hit above 220? And I think it's kind of a bigger thing. But I think when you guys get out here and see him, one thing you're starting to see is you're seeing less of that, oh, I'm going to try to golf this a mile. I think he is trying to like just make more contact. That's why you're not seeing big counting stat numbers. And you know what? Give me that for a year. Stop trying to swing for the fence. Yeah, choke up on the bat. Go hang out with Trey Morgan for a little bit and learn how to put 3 inches on the bat behind your hands and just make contact. Those are things I want. So it's like slight little positive things.
It's positive that he's trying to make those changes. Like, we know he can hit the ball country mile. Like, there's nobody out there that doubts that for a second. But yeah, I like to see that he's actually making those or trying to make those adjustments. If he can, that'd be great. We'll still wait to see on that. But who else you got here at pick 7, Welsh?
Okay, so the other one, this is tough because I'm going to battle this out. I'm going to take the pitch. I'm going to do the first pitcher off the board here because I do think, again, maybe I'm really missing an opportunity with Cam Smith. but I really feel like the two top pitchers at the top of this class are amazingly unique, especially for fantasy. But here's the deal. I was so pro Burns pre-draft and kind of like, I don't know about Hagen Smith. You said Chase Burns didn't throw. You're not wrong, except he did throw in instructs, and I did get to see that. I was at that game. There's some video out there. But here's the deal. Burns was not great in that start, and Hagen Smith, when I saw him pitch, holy crap, it's one of the best pitching performances. Mind you, there's like, you know, draft college-y, like rookie-level guys that are out there, but, you know, that thing, remember when we were talking about Hagen Smith pre-draft, Jeff Ponsett hit me up and was like, you got to see this end zone swings. You got to like see it in person. And I was baffled at how pinpoint accuracy this guy is in the zone. Just and the deception of putting stuff, he hits it where he wants it. Guys can't get on it. I didn't love the two pitch side of this, but he did told me he's starting to work that change of in. So if he's a three pitch pitcher, watch out. But I'm saying all this to say I am going to go with Chase Burns still. I just want to say I think they're closer. Like had you, I guess. There's no scenario where I've taken both of them because I would have taken, like, if you would have went five with Cags, I would have taken Christian Moore in one of the pitchers. But I'm going to take Chase Burns because of that overall arsenal and that big fastball. He struggled with command. But listen, this has come back to, this is a dude who had that entire college season, came over. He just hung around the entire end of, like, rookie through bridge league. He didn't do anything. He came out. I have a video of him shooting basketball. They have a basketball hoop outside of the Reds, like, fields, playing basketball, watching. Like, he didn't get to get into the group. And then finally, first start out there, really struggled with command. But what you saw was a absolute power fastball and an absolute power slider. He tried to put a couple of his offerings out there. He just couldn't do much with it. But the stuff was great. And it's like, oh, when that stuff gets back on point, that's going to be dominant stuff. I think Burns' ceiling to me is just higher than Hagen Smith. But boy, you want to play it safe. And in the pitching world, you probably do want to play it safe more. Hagen Smith belongs right there. So if Hagen Smith doesn't go in the top 10 here, someone's getting a steal. I know it's not super great to take pitchers in fantasy and stuff like that. The only ones I'm really super interested in and probably the first, so I'm looking here, two or three rounds are these two guys. So if I get an opportunity when things have just kind of like opened up, I'm going to go with Chase Burns here, Cags and Chase Burns for my 6-7 turn.
Nice. Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Yeah, for me, it's like this clear tier one of those two pitchers, a clear tier two, or for pitchers, I should say, of two guys. And then it's like a pretty sizable drop down to tier three for me. So I probably won't have a lot of pitchers in my FYPDs as I'm getting some late, but I won't be taking many early unless I can get, you know, one of these two guys. So, yeah, Burns, Hagen Smith, both phenomenal arms. Is Hagen Smith going here at 8 to the other Chris? We'll see.
No, I'm going to pass. I saw one of Hagen Smith's high starts. It was good. I saw him in college this year. He was much better, but a long season. Two pitches, third pitch will definitely be a huge plus for him. I'm going to take Braden Montgomery, who I think will be the complete forgotten about guy in FYPDs, just given the fact that he didn't play. He had an ankle injury in the Super Regionals and missed College World Series, unfortunately. I mean, this guy is nuts. Got to see him play a series with A&M at South Carolina this year. I mean, his tools are loud. Talk about he was a former two-way guy at Stanford, solely focused on hitting at A&M, where he played outfield. I mean, he's got 80 grade arm from the outfield, from right field. He hit 27 home runs this year, struck out 20% of the time, walked near 20% of the time. He had the highest average exit velocity in college baseball, 98.7 miles an hour, 111/90th, which is nuts. His ex-Wobicon, 556. So when he makes contact, he does insane damage. People have knocked the contact. They've said that he doesn't make enough contact. I don't find an issue with an 85% end zone contact rate, honestly, in college. I think that's a pretty solid number. I ultimately think this is going to work. I think the profile, I think what Red Sox have done with hitting prospects, I think Braden Montgomery is going to thrive. He's just an incredible athlete, got some of the best power in the class, and I think he's going to consistently slip, just given that he didn't play. But I think you can get a pretty good value on him. So I still have him as my 7th ranked guy. overall think you can make an argument for him as high as five, honestly. But I love Braden Montgomery, and I think that just the value you could get on him and the return on investment could be pretty good.
How dare you? I was going to take Braden Montgomery there. Yeah, 100% echo everything you just said. I still have him in that 5-6 range personally. Yeah, just because he didn't play and he's working his way back from injury. I think he's in a fall, and he should be one of the, you know, it's hard to get like a phenomenal value within the top 10, but I think he's going to be the best value pick in that top 10. So I will not be able to take him here, but I'll go with my other guy that's in that 5-6 range with him, and I'll go Connor Griffin from the Pittsburgh Pirates, 9th overall pick there. I mean, just tools for days. I mean, he has the, you know, the athleticism. He's one of the best athletes in this entire draft class. You know, a guy that could steal. I mean, I forget how many steals he had in high school last year. It was some ungodly number. I mean, either you guys remember what the stolen base number was from high school last
like,
year?
Was it like 94?
Yeah, it was it was close to 100 or something like that. Yeah,
94, 96, something like that.
In like what 30, whatever. It was just some stupid number. It was like 3 per game.
Max Clark did a similar thing, I think, in his last high school year. I think he had like 96 stolen bases or some absurd number.
Yeah, and these guys, you know, kind of similar. And kind of when they came in with, you know, speed and, you know, solid bat to ball, you know, where the power wind up, they'll both have, obviously, Clark has a good power projection, as does Griffin. You'll see, you know, where does the body wind up and how much power does he ultimately get to. But, you know, he's already got some impressive raw power for his age. I guess I mentioned still got projection left on the frame. Like, this could be a really, you know, really intriguing offensive, you know, skill set all around for fantasy. I'm not sure where he's going to be, shortstop, outfielder. We'll see, but he's going to be very exciting. If that power comes along and if he hits enough, it's going to be a really fun player. So, you know, obviously more downside here than a lot of the guys we've already talked about, but the upside for days here with Connor Griffin. So I will take him at pick 9, and then I'll go to Hagen Smith here at pick 10. I'll take Hagen Smith, you know, 5th overall to the White Sox. You know, I won't go super deep here. We already talked about him a few minutes ago. But yeah, that fastball slider combination, absolutely lethal. You can miss a ton of bats with both. You know, that slider is absolutely filthy, very sharp, 2-plane break there. And yeah, like as both Chris's have already mentioned, that third pitch will be, you know, the X factor here with him. And, you know, don't like seeing a 2-pitch guy, even though those 2 pitches are phenomenal. If you can just have, you know, somewhat close, like a league average changeup, just to have another pitch to keep guys off the fastball and slider, I think that's going to do him absolute wonders. So he's my number 2 pitcher in this class, and then as a drop down to the next two, a good tier drop down to the next two. So I'll be happy to get him at 10. Like I wouldn't take, so I don't like taking pitchers super early. Like if I had a pick in the top 5 or 6, pitcher would have to absolutely blow me away to take them. But around pick 10 or so, I think guys like, you know, Burns, Smith, absolutely fine. So that's pick 10. Back to Clegg for pick 11.
Yeah, so I am going to go Cam Smith. I think letting him fall much more would be just a waste of the talent. Yeah, I mean, he had a massive year at Florida State, draft-eligible sophomore this year, 16 homers, 22 doubles. Welsh kind of alluded to it earlier. He's been a heavy kind of chase guy throughout his career. He cut it pretty substantially this year, 33% in 2023, 21% this year. End zone contact jumped to 89%, which, you know, I'm a little bit more hesitant with a guy like this that made a 1-year jump. But I do think given what he showed in his debut pro-wise and then the fact of what we saw all college season, like, I think that Smith is a solid bet here. Power hitting third baseman, improved contact, improved chase, really good exit velocities. So, you know, I'm intrigued by Smith. There's some other players that kind of interest me from an upside standpoint in this range, but yeah, I'll take Cam Smith at 11.
Yep. Yeah, he had those like that one stretch where he was homering like almost like every other day. Yeah. After I think it was a little bit of a slow start, but then he got it going, kind of the opposite of Christian Moore. But yeah, absolutely very fun, very impressive. First showing from Cam Smith in pro ball. All right, Welsh, you got 2 picks here. Who you got?
All right, these are kind of, one of them's not tough. The other one's kind of tough. I was kind of hoping, I was like, man, I'm going to get Cam and this other guy. The first one I'm going to take is the easy one. I'm going to go with Bryce Rainer. I'm a big Bryce Rainer guy, big physical shortstop. It was one of those, and I know you guys probably go through this all the time. And it's really cool validation when you watch a guy and then when you take a look at reports after. I try to do that. That's how I try to approach a lot of things. And then you come up and you see the similar comps. And you look at Rainer and you're like, oh, I see there's a Corey Seager. There's a Corey Seagerness in his swing. And then everybody on the planet says, by the way, the comps of Corey Seager and like the big physical nature. But I love Bryce Rainer, 6'3", 200-pound shortstop with big power, can run some contact. I think Bryce Rainer is a ton of upside here. And I believe in the last one we did, this isn't loading, but I think, did I take him higher?
Let's see.
Yeah, I took him at 8.
Yep.
Yeah, so I actually took him and Kurtz. So me getting him here as the last in like a 12 team, I'm going to lock that down. Now I think things are opening up a little bit. I'm really torn because this is where I think there's some good value. I think there's some unheralded players. I don't know if there's a must. I was battling between these two. I'm gonna pull the trigger on this. I'm gonna go back to Slade Caldwell. I took Slade in the last one. I'm gonna go back to him. One of the things that worries me, he is a smaller guy, and the Diamondbacks love their small outfielders. They really do. Like these sub 5'9" like outfielders, or maybe he's like 5'9". I think he's like listed at five. Yeah, he's listed at 5'9". But you know what I will tell you is out here, getting to watch Drew Gilbert and Jet Williams. So Jet is very small. And I thought Drew might be a little bit smaller, but he's, I guess, confirmed like a true 5'9". And there is a Drew Gilbertness in Slade Caldwell. But Slade is built even tiny bit thicker. And like Drew Gilbert's got these big old forearms. Put a video out. He crushed one 430 down center. And then he had one of the biggest pull side homers you've ever seen at the Giants Stadium. I take all that to say, I kind of think there might be that in Slade. Slade's got tremendous bat speed. He was out playing in the Bridge League the entire time. So this is where this sucks. He could have had a month's worth of stats that you guys could have taken a look at. Everyone could be watching, but it wasn't because it was in the Bridge League, unsanctioned game. But he played every single day with the rest of that Diamondbacks draft class that J.D. Dix was out there and all that. Like, there's, like I said, tremendous speed, great bat speed, good ability for contact, and he's the type of guy they've taken more analytical approaches that if he's getting the ball in the air, he's, even in his size, is kind of a physical beast. And I think there's a ton of fantasy upside in a guy like him. Along the lines of, like, I won't be shocked at a minor league season where it's a 15-homer, 35-stolen-base type of year. It's just going to be, maybe it's going to be tinier for a year or two. Maybe it's going to be, you know, 8 homers and 30 plus stolen bases, but he's super aggressive. I'm going to go with the upside because I think there's a lot of guys that are in a similar trajectory. There's a couple college bats that would have made sense, but give me Slade.
I kind of had a feeling you were going that way. I was like, I know you were high in them when we talked about this, you know, a few months ago. So I was wondering if you'd go back to that well with Caldwell. Yes, he's really fun. Absolutely. And definitely deserves to be in this, you know, 12 to 16 range or so of FYPDs. All right, now we're up to, where are we at? Pick 14 with Clegg.
Yeah, it does kind of open up. You can go several different ways. I'm going to take Carson Binge, the Mets outfield, another former two-way guy, actually. He has really big pop. He had a good debut, not super flashy in his debuting, and he goes in the Florida State League, single A, but he's performed well. I love watching him play. I love the swing. He's not small. He's 6'1", but he's kind of like one of those shorter-looking guys, just kind of bulky, strong. Put up impressive slash line this year at Oklahoma State. He has hit the ball hard consistently at a 91% in-zone contact rate in his pro debut, which is solid. I think that he's just kind of a well-rounded profile that's not super flashy, but I do think that Carson Binge kind of checks a lot of boxes of what I look for in this kind of range. It's a player that could hit the ground running and that I'm pretty intrigued by.
All right, over to me, pick 15 and 16 here. I'll go with Theo Gillen from the Tampa Bay Rays. He was their first rounder, 18th overall. Another guy that was, you know, shortstop in high school, transitioned out to center field. Got in 8 games in low-A Charleston. Didn't really do a whole lot in those 8 games, but I love the all-around skill set here. You know, the downside is there is some He's already had some injury history pile up here. He's only 18 years old. Well, technically, he just turned 19 about a month and a half ago in mid-September. But you know, if he can stay healthy, there's a really fantasy-friendly skill set here. These are the guys I like to take, you know, a shot on, especially if, you know, in the second round of FYPDs or if I have like a late first. I definitely get these upside guys because he's got a nice power speed blend, you know, decent bat to ball skill. He's a plus runner, so it makes sense they move him up to center field there. I think he could be a potential 20-20 guy or even 20-25. Maybe got a little bit like a Jordan Lawler feel to him at times I've seen. So I like Theo going a lot. I think I have him ranked a little bit higher than most do. I could have him right around 10 or 11 in my own rankings. So I am I like taking him here at, where are we at? Pick 15. After that, I think I'll go back to the kind of like the shortstop outfield world here. I'll go with Seaver King here with my number 16 pick. And another guy, I think I took him in. Did I take him in the? I took Theo Gillen in the Roto-Wire one.
You
did. One.
You took him 15 in that one. So you that. Just so, took him 16, right?
I should have just flip flopped these just so he would be the missed opportunity there. But another guy with a fantasy friendly skill set. He kind of had up and down career at Wake Forest, so I think there's a wider range of opinions on him right now. But he's another guy. He's a good athlete. You know, he's twitchy. Got good bat speed. Kind of want to see where he winds up in the field if they go shortstop or outfield route with Seaver King. But regardless, I think he's a guy that can provide a lot of, you know, positive, you know, outcomes across the board here. Guy that can hit for power, you know, steal you some bags, hit for, you know, provide a decent average and OBP as well. Not the biggest guy around, though, bigger than a few of the guys we've talked about. He is, you know, listed at 6 foot, 190, but very strong frame. He can really put a charge into the ball. So I think he's a nice above average all around offensive player. And I think the other guy I'd be more than happy to take after pick 10 or so. And I have now in two straight mock drafts. So go with him at 16 and back over to Clegg at 17.
All right. Where do I want to go? I will take Ryan Sloan, right-handed pitcher of the Mariners. I think I probably won't take one of the top two arms in Burns or Hagen Smith, but Ryan Sloan is the pitcher that I am looking to target. The Mariners have a really strong track record of development with arms. He fits their mold kind of perfectly. They identify traits in pitchers and draft or acquire accordingly. And Sloan's a tall 6'4" righty. Just physical guy. It's a mid-90s fastball, touches 98. Those heavy fading changeup with carry and the mid to upper 80s. It's 15 plus inches of sweep on the slider, low to mid 80s there with high spin. Like when I watch Ryan Sloan pitch, it just is impressive. He commands all three of those pitches well for his age. I look at prep arms is risky, obviously, but I think in this kind of range, you look and you say, okay, where's the upside shot? And it's kind of my upside dart here is Ryan Sloan is a guy that I think could make a really positive leap. And, you know, I wouldn't shy away from taking him this high because I think the talent level's kind of off the charts here. The Arsenal pitch metrics are extremely good. So Ryan Sloan at 17.
Yeah, this is the range where there's a lot of like fun upside guys. It's just which upside profile do you like more in this range? So definitely a good pick there. All right, Welsh, you got two picks here, 18 and 19.
All right, I'm going to do the other guy I almost considered in this. I mean, what a homer play that I'm putting up here. But Ryan Waldschmidt, I think, is a great play here. I almost considered him over Slade, not knowing if Slade would come back, but this is a bigger college bat. This is a 6'2", 205 outfielder that the Diamondbacks drafted out of Kentucky, who, fantastic season, really great underlying metrics, good hard hit numbers, stole four bases in his early onset. He got literally like 40 at-bats, and he was over in the Cal League. But huge OBP. He ended up almost walking twice as many times as striking out in his pro debut, which would be absolutely huge. It was like almost a 200 point difference between his batting average and OBP, but he's a guy that's going to thrive. I'm not sure if he is special, like elite fantasy special, but could he become like a Brian Reynolds type fantasy player? Like, yeah, I think that the possibility is there. So I think there's a really good floor slash upside for a college bat in this range. And then I'm going to complement with it. I'm sticking to this from before. I appreciate everything you said with Ryan Sloan. I just feel that way about Cam Caminiti. And I think, Cross, yeah, you took him last time we did this. But
yep,
Caminiti, actually out of Saguaro out here where I live, we got to see him actually pitch in a game at high A. We know the Braves also pushed their pitcher. I mean, most of these high school guys, I mean, Chase Burns didn't pitch until instructs. Cam Caminiti did get a start, struck out 4 in his first, multiple pitches, big fastball, pretty solid command as well. I think he is an advanced high school pitcher, and I think he's a dude that is going to push through that system and is going to be a big strikeout fantasy guy, which we really want. So I think Cam Caminiti, from that pitchability standpoint of just being like, you know, a high school smart advanced pitcher, he is kind of near the top, kind of in that Noble Meyer-ish smart range, but his stuff might be bigger. So I'm going to go with Cam Caminiti paired with Ryan Waldschmidt.
Yeah, I was going to take Caminiti. If you and then Welsh and then Clegg can take him, I was going to take him in the next pick. So
yeah,
love that pick.
I have Caminiti and Sloan back-to-back. I was at Caminiti's only pro start, and the Braves are going to slow play him. They have stripped back all his pitches. He threw just fastball slider. They've done that with a lot of their guys. Threw one changeup, but the changeup's probably, it was his best secondary in high school. So, you know, I think Caminiti's development's going to be fun to watch. He was 17 on draft day. He turned 18 early August, if I'm not mistaken. So really young, really advanced. He was 2025 draft class and reclassified. So yeah, he's a really fun arm. I am probably going to go kind of off board, but this is kind of like my stamp guy, stamp in this draft, and that's Griffin Burkholder of the Phillies. Have him ranked 20th, and I'm at the 20th pick. And while I do have a couple guys ahead of him that are still on the board, Griffin Burkholder kind of encompasses everything I look for in a prep bat year over year. It's what helped me find Roman Anthony around draft time before he really took off. And Burkholder kind of checks those boxes too. It's kind of telling they gave him a $2.5 million bonus near double slot, which that kind of speaks of how teams value their players. He played in one game as a pro. He had a 101 mile an hour triple, had 70 grade wheels, and that's been kind of consistent. He was one of the faster players in the prep class. He had a 6.29 60 yard dash, good splits, home to first 3.54, which is absolutely nuts. There's plenty of power projection, 6'2 frame. Just how much contact does Burkholder make? But I mean, it's a swing that's geared for loft. I mean, his very high air percentage in his PBR showcase events with big exit velocities. So, you know, the bat and the hand speed are really good. I'll take my chances here with Burkholder. It's probably a little higher than, you know, most are willing to go, but kind of just want to, you know, stamp flag plant per se my guy here, Griffin Burkholder of the Phillies.
Nice. Yeah, I like Burkholder a lot too. Definitely a lot of upside there. So, well, yeah, I get two picks here, so I think we're, yeah, let's go one more round. So I'll make my two, one more for each of the Chris's, then we'll call it good at 24 picks. That's what we did in the RotoWire one as well. Probably a good sweet spot there. Oh, I can go a few different ways here. I'm going to go, first of all, I'm going to go, this is a safer pick. This is not a sexy one, maybe more on the boring side, but I'll go with James Tibbs, outfielder, corner infielder as well. We'll play a little first base. Went 13th overall to the San Francisco Giants out of Florida State. And he's basically like, you know, Nick Kurtz light, obviously not as good as Nick Kurtz, not the same power as Nick Kurtz, but kind of similar guy where, all right, he hits for power, he can get on base, you know, he has good bat to ball skills, right? And we saw that last year. He hit 363 last year at Florida State. Yeah, he had 415 in low A. He did struggle a bit in high A, but did hit a couple home runs out there, but a little bit of a strikeout issue to start in 36 and 26 games, but I'm not overly worried about it. Never was an issue for him in college. Got somewhere, you know, Condon, I'm not really taking a lot of his struggles with strikeouts to heart yet. Maybe if that continues in 2025, then I might start valuing that a bit more. But you know, he's a guy that's maybe going to get a little bit forgotten within all the upside here And both with the collegiate guys and a lot of the high school guys that would get taken in that, you know, 15 to 25 range or so. A guy like Tibbs, I think, is just going to be overlooked because he's not the upside guy. I think you can get some pretty good value on him. I will go with the other pitcher I have in kind of in that tier two. I'll go Treya Savage. I didn't love the landing spot with Toronto because we've seen Toronto kind of, I hate to say this, mess up a lot of their top arms, but it definitely kind of fits, you know, both in terms of development. A lot of their guys can't stay healthy either, but I'm kind of hoping that since a lot of those guys that have kind of gone south were more so the high school prep arms that they took that they had for a longer period of time in their system. You know, a more advanced collegiate guy like Treya Savage, you know, probably won't be in the system more than a year, year and a half or so, if that, won't get too affected by it. So, because I like to use Savage a good amount here. You know, he's got that starter's frame that you look for. It's like a Garrett Cole type of frame, you know, 6'4", 230, or somewhere in that ballpark. A guy that can miss bats. He limits the walks very well. He can pound the zone. You know, good low, you know, curveball and changeup, slider, you know, fastball, mid-90s, touch a little bit higher with it, good four-pitch mix. You know, he uses all four of those to both righties and lefties. So a lot of the things I love to see, you know, that he kind of checks off. And is he going to be an ace? No. But could he settle in as a really good, like, number three starter or even a number two starter on the higher end outcome? Yeah, absolutely. I think he can definitely get to that range. So I will, if I'm going to go a pitcher and you want to go more on the safer side, Treya Savage is probably the pick there. So a couple of safer picks for my last two here. I'll go back to Clegg for his last pick.
All right. Rounding it out, I think the majority of my top 20 has been taken at this point, except a pitcher who I'm actually going to pass on. I'm going to take kind of a helium guy in Braylon Payne.
Oh, yeah. Who, you literally just, I mean, that is who I was taking with my last pick. I want to point out, you just absolutely took the helium out of me. It's just unreal.
I can go another way. You can talk Payne. I've not seen Payne other than the data. You've seen Payne in the Bridge League, correct?
I've seen him a ton. That's all why right. I was going
to
take him.
Yes. I will. Okay. So I'll go another way because I want to hear what you have to say about him. I was going to take Payne. I mean, he comes in as a hit and speed guy. He hit a ball over 110 miles an hour with Wood. He changed his approach completely. He never used a leg kick as a prep. Now he's doing that, and I think he's going to get to more power and speed. So I was going to take him, but I'll let Welsh speak to him because he's seen him. And I am going to take another prep guy who I also like in Tyson Lewis. Got him ranked back-to-back. Cincinnati Reds, Welsh may have seen him too out
there. Seen him a ton too, yeah.
Yep. Lewis's power, speed, athleticism, good frame, 6'2", 195. Natural loft in his swing, very quick sprint times, 6'4", 60 in high school. That's right there with Burkholder that I mentioned. He doesn't swing and miss often. It's exit velocity is up to 108 on the prep showcase. So, yeah, I just look at Tyson Lewis, and he's in that range where it's like, yeah, this is the range I want to be shopping in, actually, because I just am really enamored with a lot of these prep guys in this range rather than the higher prep guys. I think some of these are going to pop off, and we'll go in and look back and say those guys were great value. So, yeah, I have no problem taking Lewis. You taking Braylon Payne, who you've seen.
Yeah, both of them great picks. I didn't mean for you to get off of Payne or anything.
I
want to
hear what you
have
to say about Payne.
Well, Lewis, real quick, is interesting. Shout out to my friend Troy Collins, who's got this huge Instagram account, who does, you know, just films guys and stuff like that. And I was talking with Troy, and that's his guy, is Tyson Lewis. He's like, every time he goes out to Reds Complex, there are those players that happen. Cooper, I always mention Cooper Pratt was that guy for me. Every time you saw them, they were doing stuff and making good contact, hard contact. And that was Tyson Lewis for him. And to be fair, every time I've seen Tyson Lewis, yeah, you're seeing just like a nice single or double into the gap. He's got a really projectable body. Going back to Braylon Payne, though, that's the guy where, you know, you saw that pick and you were like, what? You know, like, what are we doing? But then I got to see his, you know, pro debut. It really wasn't his pro debut. It was you know, the Bridge League debut. He goes in. He leads off. He does not have a power swing right now. He has a very across his body type of swing. But he has got the physical attributes, if that thing starts to change, that he makes tons of contact. He is a wildly aggressive base stealer. Like, he was the leadoff guy. Every time he gets on, he is trying to steal bases. And he's the type of guy that's going to steal 50-plus bases in the minor leagues. I don't have a doubt about that. But he also has that body type where, yeah, this is a bad comp because they're so physically different. But it reminds me of, like, you know, Luis Garcia with the Nationals. Luis Garcia was a guy that was just kind of always, you know, low launch angles, hitting across his body. But I remember watching him in the AFL, and he was just hitting tanks. And it was like, oh, this just has to start to adjust. Like, he's got to start making that part of his game. And it took way longer for Garcia to start doing that. Braylon Payne, if you want to talk about upside, if he does start hitting for power, then you're like, oh, this is like a 15-50 guy. And he's a great leadoff hitter. He's still learning a little bit as far as like the aggressiveness. But like I said, he just doesn't get beat a whole bunch. So I think Braylon Payne, you know, it's unfortunate. I mean, it's good because we can't do a two-hour podcast. But like, you're starting to now get in the range of where they're sneaky guys. I think a lot of people kind of, this is very helpful because you can see what has adjusted to the consensus. But then you get outside the top 20 and we're like, oh, we're about to not make any picks anymore. Who are some guys we need to make sure that we're talking about? Braylon Payne needed to be one of them. I like the Lewis one, Burkholder. But then, you know, there's still like a handful of guys that belong in this territory. But I think the key point is like Braylon Payne is right in that top 25 first-year player. So if you've got a mid-second round pick, I would play the upside, especially for fantasy and what he's going to do from the stolen base side. Because I'm not sure there's any other player in this class that could be more impactful on the stolen base side. Plus, it's a really good bat. You, in a year from now, you guys are going to just be like, can Braylon Payne hit for power? You know, and I think that'll be the big question moving forward with him. But I'll take that bet with, like, you know, an 18-year-old high school athletic outfielder with tons of tools that they can develop that.
Yeah, if you're especially a rebuilding team, that guy you can wait on a guy like Payne for a few years to see if that develops and turns into a, you know, high impact fantasy bat. Yeah, that's a great pick, and you've seen him really skyrocket up a lot of FYPD rankings for sure. He didn't go. I don't believe he went to top 24. No, he didn't go in the July 1 on RotoWire. But yeah, definitely good.
He wasn't even close for me until I got to see him in person in the Bridge League. And I was like, wow, he is shining out. And that was, you know, that first game was Caglione was in the lineup for the Royals. You had quite a handful of other Royals guys. But then the Brewers, they had Burke, you know, the college first baseman. They had Prince Fielder's kid in. I mean, it was this like stacked Bridge League game. Payne was hands down the best player in that game. Like, you know, so that's where you're starting to talk about like, oh, he just, and he is like, yeah, he's got some swagger to him. Like, he's intense. Like, he's going to be a dude.
Yeah. I think that's a good way to wrap it up with Braylon Payne, bringing the pain there with the last selection of our little mock draft here. Welsh, as always, pleasure having you on. You always bring the heat, and we will see you in a couple of days, my friend.
Looking forward to it. Looking to seeing those faces, doing some stuff live, and hanging out, hopefully.
Absolutely, and in some good weather, too. I didn't want that 100-degree stuff. So it's going to be great weather, some great baseball, and we will have our next episode will be our live from First Pitch Arizona. Again, not 100% sure when that will be up on platforms, but we will let you guys know. But until then, everyone take care.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. TNCs apply. Available in app only.